Ever wonder if being called a permanent employee at a government job really means anything? Like, can they actually fire you without a good reason and a chance to defend yourself?
Yeah, it's a question a lot of people probably have.
Well, we're going to look into a Supreme Court case today that looks into that exact question.
Right.
It's Bishop v. Wood. And this case, well, it kind of shakes up what we think about due process, the idea that the government can't just take away your rights without a fair
And
process.
it's one of those cases that every law student, really any lawyer dealing with employment law, should absolutely know inside and out.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So to set the stage, we have Carl Bishop, a police officer in Marion, North Carolina.
And get this, he was officially classified as a permanent employee.
So you'd think he'd be pretty secure, right?
I mean, I would think so.
But then, boom, he gets fired. No hearing, no chance to really fight back.
Just a private explanation from the city manager, listing these reasons like not following orders, missing some training sessions, and conduct unbecoming an officer.
And that's what this whole deep dive is going to untangle. Did Marion violate Bishop's 14th Amendment rights by firing him without a proper chance to respond?
The 14th Amendment, that big one that says no state can take away your life, liberty, or property without due process of law? Did Bishop have a protected property interest in his job? Did they mess with his liberty by firing him in this way?
Exactly. It's all about property and liberty interests. Those are huge in constitutional law. And to get into all of this, we're going straight to the source. The Bishop v. Wood Supreme Court opinions themselves will break down the majority's reasoning, the dissents, the whole nine yards.
So let's start with that term that seems so reassuring at first, permanent employee. Marion even had this city ordinance that spelled out how a permanent employee could be dismissed, specifically mentioning things like inefficiency or unfitness. And it sounds like, at least on the surface, Bishop's firing kind of fit into those reasons.
Right. The city manager acted on a recommendation from the police chief. Seems all above board so far.
But here's where things get really interesting. Bishop was let go without a pre-termination hearing. Like, no chance to give his side of the story. Imagine that. You're in his shoes, suddenly out of a job, labeled with these potentially damaging reasons.
And I think it's crucial for our listeners, as future lawyers, to consider this. What if the reasons for his dismissal weren't accurate? What if there was more to the story? A hearing could have given him that opportunity to present his case.
Right. Definitely food for thought.
Now, even though the city manager privately explained the reasons to Bishop, this private nature of the communication is going to become a huge point of contention in the legal arguments.
Okay, so let's break down these constitutional concepts, property interest and liberty interest.
All right. So a property interest basically boils down to a reasonable expectation of continued employment. This expectation usually comes from things like state laws, contracts, or clear policies that suggest you can't just be fired on a whim. And then we've got liberty interest. This one gets triggered when a government action harms your reputation so badly or makes it so hard for you to find another job that it basically takes away your liberty to pursue your chosen career.
Yeah, like if you're publicly branded as incompetent or dishonest, that can follow you around, making it near impossible to get hired elsewhere,
That's
right?
exactly.
So now we have to ask, did Bishop have either of these interests? And if so, did the city violate his due process rights by not giving him a fair chance to respond?
Now, in the Supreme Court's majority opinion, Justice Stevens tackles this head-on. He basically says, look, property interests are determined by state law, not by the Constitution itself.
So they're basically saying it all boils down to how North Carolina law, specifically that Marion ordinance, was interpreted.
Precisely. And the state courts had already ruled on this, finding that even with the permanent employee label, Bishop's position was ultimately at the will of the city.
At will, meaning they could fire him for pretty much any reason.
Yeah, that's what the state courts concluded.
So what's the takeaway for us legal eagles in the making? The Supreme Court, at least the majority here, seems to be saying, unless a state law clearly and unmistakably guarantees you a for-cause protection and a right to a hearing before you get fired, simply being called permanent doesn't mean you have a constitutional property interest in your job.
Right, and this has huge implications
Right.
because it puts a lot of emphasis on specific wording in state and local laws.
Like one little word could make all the difference in how much job security you have.
Absolutely.
Now, what about Bishop's liberty interest? You mentioned that the private nature of his dismissal plays a big role.
Oh, yeah, that's key. The majority said that since the reasons for Bishop's firing, those allegations of insubordination, missing training, and conduct unbecoming, were kept private between him and the city, his liberty wasn't infringed upon.
And this is where that powerful line from the opinion comes in. Mere dismissal, even for unsupported reasons, does not infringe liberty without public defamation. So even if the reasons for firing him were bogus, as long as the city didn't shout it from the rooftops, they didn't see it as a constitutional problem.
Right. And the majority also emphasized the idea of federalism, you know, the balance of power between the federal government and the states.
Yeah.
They basically said, look, federal courts shouldn't be meddling in the day-to-day personnel decisions of state and local governments. Those are best left to the states, unless there's a very clear violation of a federal right.
Okay, so that's the majority. But like with many big Supreme Court cases, there were dissenting opinions that offered completely different perspectives on this.
Absolutely. Dissenting opinions are so important to understanding the full picture.
Let's start with Justice Brennan. He took issue with the majority's narrow view of liberty. Specifically, he argued that the very nature of the reasons given for Bishop's firing, especially that conduct unbecoming label, automatically carried a stigma, regardless of whether it was made public or not.
It's like a scarlet letter.
Exactly. He called it a badge of infamy that could seriously harm Bishop's chances of finding another job in law enforcement, even if the city never broadcasted those reasons to potential employers.
He argued that it's naive to think that these kinds of allegations wouldn't eventually get around, even if they're not officially publicized.
And Brennan argued that this potential damage to Bishop's reputation and career prospects meant he deserved a hearing, a chance to defend himself and clear his name. It's like, even if it wasn't public defamation in the strictest sense, the nature of those allegations was inherently damaging.
So for Justice Brennan, due process was about more than just what's technically public. It was about protecting individuals from unfair and potentially career-ending accusations, regardless of how widely they were known.
Then we've got Justice White's dissent, and he zeroes in on the property interest question. He brings up a case called Arnett v. Kennedy from 1974 to support his argument.
Ah, Arnett. Now, this gets into some real legal weeds, but it's crucial for understanding this debate about due process for public employees. Basically, Arnett involved a federal employee who was fired, and the main takeaway was that if a property right exists, even if it's created by state law, then the Constitution's due process protections kick in to make sure there's a fair procedure before that right is taken away.
I'm starting to see where Justice White is going with this.
So White argues that even though the Marion Ordinance didn't explicitly say Bishop had a right to a hearing, the fact that it outlined those for cause reasons for dismissal created a property interest in his job.
Because it implied that he couldn't be fired unless one of those reasons applied.
Exactly. And once that property interest, even if it came from state law, is established, the Constitution requires some form of due process before that property, his job in this case, can be taken away.
White saw the majority's decision as basically letting states get away with a bit of a trick, creating a property right, but then limiting or even eliminating the procedures needed to protect it.
Precisely.
Yeah.
And he worried that this could create a system where certain rights only existed on paper without any real safeguards. And remember, Justices Marshall and Blackmun joined both Brennan's and White's dissenting opinions, showing there was deep disagreement on the court about these issues.
So let's zoom out and think about what Bishop v. Wood means in the big picture. How did it change how we understand due process rights for public employees?
Well, compared to earlier cases like Board of Regents v. Roth, 1972, which had suggested a broader view of what could count as a property interest, Bishop definitely narrowed the scope of due process protections. It really emphasized that explicit guarantees in state law were crucial for establishing a protected property right in your job.
And in practical terms, this decision gave states more freedom in how they wrote their employment laws. They could be more careful about the language they used to potentially avoid creating these for cause protections and maybe sidestep some federal due process requirements.
Now, this doesn't mean the Supreme Court completely closed the door on due process for public employees. Later cases, like Cleveland Board of Education v. Loudermill, 1985, clarified that even in some at-will employment situations where the employer doesn't have to give a reason for firing you, you still might be entitled to a chance to respond to charges against you before getting the boot.
So Loudermill sort of walked back that strict Bishop standard a bit, recognizing that even if a state doesn't guarantee a property interest in your job, once it sets up some sort of procedure for dismissal, it can't just ignore those procedures without some due process.
Right. That's a good way to put it.
So what's the key takeaway for our listeners, those future legal eagles out there?
Well, first off, Bishop v. Wood is a must-know case. It teaches us that the details really matter, especially when it comes to state and local employment laws. The specific words used in those laws can make a huge difference in your job security and due process rights as a public employee.
It also shows that this whole area of law, where individual rights bump up against government power, is full of gray areas and it's constantly evolving.
Exactly. Bishop highlighted that tension between giving public employers the flexibility to manage their workforce and making sure public employees have basic fairness and a chance to be heard before losing their jobs.
So, to wrap up our deep dive on Bishop v. Wood, we've seen how crucial state law is in determining your rights as a public employee. We've explored the different arguments about property and liberty interests, and we've seen how the Supreme Court wrestled with finding the right balance between government power and individual rights.
And as you move forward in your legal journeys, we want to leave you with this question to really ponder. Does Bishop v. Wood get that balance right? Does it do enough to protect public employees from unfair dismissal, or does it tilt too far in favor of government efficiency?
And how might this decision, made back in 1976, still be shaping how states and cities write their employment policies today? Those are questions worth thinking about. And for those who want to go even deeper, we highly recommend checking out those related cases we mentioned. Board of Regents v. Roth in Cleveland, Board of Education v. Loudermill, they provide even more context and nuance to this complex area of constitutional law.
And with that, we wrap up another deep dive, hoping you've gained some valuable insights from this exploration of a landmark Supreme Court case.
Always a pleasure.